I would like to talk about a variant of Helios that we designed to run MixNet-based elections. I would like to have my focus on many of the design choices we made and on what we learned by running those elections. So first, just a few highlights about Helios that we will use here. First one is that Helios has been designed as a voting system that allows voters to just use their browser for voting. So that's a very nice choice by Ben, in the sense that everyone that uses the internet typically has a browser, and so that really helps voting. On the other hand, the only thing that we can use to have the voter prepare their ballots that is in all browsers is a JavaScript interpreter. And despite a lot of improvement during the last month, a JavaScript interpreter is something that computes fairly slowly. So that brings important limitations in terms of the amount of computation and the type of cryptographic protocols that we can expect to run into our browser. Second aspect, Helios has been designed for local Russian elections. It's supposed to be usable in a remote setting. That means that it's really difficult to make the difference between the voter and the cursor. And so that's something that was part of Helios and that is still part of the variant that we are proposing here. We have more and more experience in running real elections with Helios. So up to now, about 40,000 votes have been tallied using Helios. That keeps growing. And among those 40,000 votes, more than 8,000 have been tallied using MixNets. So the question might be, okay, why do we bring another tallying technique? Do we advocate moving from one technique to another, or shall we keep both, or do we expect that one will just disappear with time? I just would like to provide a small comparison between the two techniques from the way elections are organized. So if you use homomorphic tallying, the way you will perform the tally is just by taking all the ciphertext, encrypting the votes, and then from that you will compute one ciphertext encrypting the outcome of the election. So that's something that is very efficient to do, that is completely public. You do not need to know any secret for doing that. So that's something that is really convenient. On the other hand, if you move to MixNet-based tallying, what you will need to do is to introduce all the ballots into a sequence of mixed servers. And even though that's something that is publicly verifiable, the job of all mixed server, which is to shuffle the ballots and to re-encrypt them, involves some secrets. So the mixed servers need to generate random permutations, they need to generate some randomness to re-encrypt the ballots, and these are secrets that they need to keep. So that makes their task much more complicated. At the end of the election, when we either mix the ballots or when we prepare the encryption of the outcome of the election, we have the trustees that need to decrypt in order to obtain the result of the election. If you use homomorphic tallying, the only thing that you will decrypt is the outcome of the election. So that's revealing really a little bit of information. And that's essentially what you typically need to reveal at the end of an election, how many votes each candidate received. So from a security point of view, that's really interesting. From a practical point of view, that's really useful too, because the trustees only need to decrypt one single ciphertext, or maybe one ciphertext per candidate. So that's a very simple task in terms of amount of computation. And typically, it's even cheaper than preparing a ballot. So that's something that the trustees might be able to do just in their browser if they want. On the other hand, if you use MixNets, now what you will do after shuffling and re-encrypting all the ballots is to decrypt, but decrypt now all of them. So that means that you will need to obtain much more information. You will need to open all the ballots. So you will not just know the results, you will know the actual content of each of the ballots. And so if your election is sensitive to attacks like the Italian attack that we mentioned this morning, that might be a real problem. Another thing is that now you do not decrypt just the outcome of the election. As I said, you need to decrypt all the ballots. And so if you have more than a few thousands of voters, that becomes a computationally intensive task. something that you will not be able anymore to perform in a browser. So that means that you will now need to ask the trustees to run some software out of the browser that might be much more complicated to do. So a lot of advantages on the homomorphic side. Now we'll come to some of the advantages on the MixNet side, which is coming from the fact that when you use homomorphic tallying, since you will never decrypt the individual ballots, you still need to make sure somehow that those ballots are valid, that they contain just one vote. That's something that you will do by adding zero knowledge proofs of the validity of your ballots. The problem with that is that this typically involves a lot of computation. That's typically much more expensive than just encrypting the ballots. And another thing is that if you have a second election and change the ballot validity rules, that means that you will need to change your zero knowledge proofs as well. So that's much more complicated. You need to probably bring a cryptographer, you need to change cryptographic code, you need to review the code again. That might be very inconvenient. It still comes with one big advantage, which is now, as you submit your ballot encrypted with the zero knowledge proofs, everyone can check immediately whether the ballot is valid or not. So if a voter submits an invalid ballot, you can just see it immediately and maybe come back to that voter and say, okay, you submitted an invalid ballot, how did you do that? Why did you do it? Is there something going wrong with the election, or did you just try to mess with the system? So you can investigate before the end of the election. That's very convenient. If you take the MixNet approach, on the other hand, now since you will decrypt all ballots individually, you can check their validity in the clear domain. So you can just look at the ballot, like if it was a paper ballot, and automatically check their validity at that time. So you do not need to bring those zero-knowledge proofs. So if you change the format of your ballots, you can just keep encrypting them. You do not care about changing some proofs, since you do not have those proofs anymore. But on the other hand, now, since you will only be able to find out whether a ballot is valid or not after decryption, you will now wonder at that time only whether what happened. And it will become very difficult to investigate where the problem might be coming from, because at that time the ballots are completely anonymous. So you cannot go back to the person who submitted that wrong ballot and see what happened. Or at least it would be much more complicated to do. So to summarize, if we take the homomorphic tallying approach, what we do is to somehow move the computational burden on the voters. They need to compute complex proofs, and on the programmers, in the sense that you will probably need to do much more changes every time you move from an election to another. If you take the MixNet-based tallying methods, then you move the burden on the trustees. They will have much more things to do, shuffling, decrypting many more things, and on the election organizers, because now they will probably have much more stress on detecting, on solving problem of invalid ballots. Okay, so now, why did we in practice start using those MixNet approach? Almost 2 years ago now, the students at UCL came to us saying, okay, we would like to have verifiable elections as well. Can you help us for that? So we said, why not? How do your election look? And they explained to us that they had more than 250 candidates and some specific ballot filling rules. And essentially, that made it very complicated to use the homomorphic tallying approach, in the sense that we really had way too much computation to perform in the browser if we needed to do that. So that's why we decided to move for those elections to a MixNet tallying approach. So what were the big changes with that? In terms of election setup, we decided to adopt a way that essentially did not require any real change. We decided that the re-encryption, that the mix server would be something completely independent of the trustees carrying secret keys. We use re-encryption mix nets, so we do not need to have any secret global to the election or whatever. That part can be kept completely independent of the rest. And we keep using the same system as currently implemented in Helios for the decryption, encryption and decryption procedure. In terms of ballot preparation, there we have many more changes. One good thing is that now we can just have one single ciphertext if we want for all the candidates, We do not need to prove anything, so that becomes much more convenient. But still now it becomes very important to prove that all ballots have been built independently of each other. Else someone might be just copying somebody else's ballot and look after the encryption whether there are two identical ballots and say, okay, I know how that person from who I copied that ballot voted. So we needed to take care of that. In terms of audits and tallying procedures, many changes too. We now need to handle mixing. That's a new task. We need to change the decryption procedure, which becomes much more computationally intensive. And we need to add this phase after decryption of verifying the validity of all the ballots and to count in order to obtain the election outcome. Okay, so a few aspects of those changes. In terms of ballot preparation, we need two things when we prepare ballots for entering mixed server. The first thing is that we need to use a randomizable encryption scheme. We need to be able to re-randomize all the ciphertext in order to be able to cut the link between the person who prepared the ciphertext and the ciphertext that we will eventually decrypt. On the other hand, we also need to be able to check the independence of all those ciphertexts. And that seems to be conflicting with the first requirement, because if I'm able to just re-randomize the ciphertext in such a way that I cannot link the re-randomized ciphertext from the original one, then I'm just able to do the operation I mentioned before of taking somebody else's ciphertext and just re-randomize it. So that's a problem that has been identified earlier. And Douglas Fixum proposed a solution, which is to use submission secure augmented crypto system. So the way it works is to say, okay, we will just take one basic encryption scheme, which allows to re-encrypt ciphertext, to re-randomize the ciphertext, and we will augment it into a non-malleable encryption scheme. It will be NCCA2 encryption scheme. And now we expect to have a strip procedure that allows us to take a non-malleable ciphertext to verify that it is valid and to just strip it in order to recover the basic ciphertext, and that's the basic ciphertext that we will enter into the mixing phase. So now in practice, we ask the voter to encrypt their choices using the augmented crypto system. The voting server will use the non-malleability property of this augmented crypto system to say, okay, we will just throw away all the duplicate ciphertext. Then we will use the stripping procedure to verify whether all the ballots, all the ciphertexts are valid, and just keep the randomizable part. And this part will go into the mixnet. Okay, so now we had to choose a submission secure augmented crypto system. We wanted to have something that was efficient enough to be used in a browser, and that just keeps the same security model we had for homomorphic elections in Helios. So we wanted to have something that was secure in the decisional Diffie-Hellman assumption in the random oracle model. So there are two very classical methods of doing something like that. First one is just to provide a Schnorr signature, which is in the red frame, beside the Elgamal encryption in the green frame. That's a very efficient solution. However, this solution is not known to be NCCA2 secure, which is the security notion that we were targeting under the decisional Diffie-Hellman assumption in the random oracle model. So that left us a bit uncomfortable. Another technique, which is well known, is to use the narrow Jung trick, which is to take the Elgamal ciphertext, just produce a second encryption of the ballot with another public key, and to prove that the two ciphertexts encrypt the same thing. And so that works, that can be proven secure, but it becomes much more expensive. So now we have 5 extra modular exponentiation in order to have this independence layer, this augmentation. A third solution is one solution that has been proposed by Douglas Wickstrom in the same paper in which he suggested submission secure augmented crypto system is to use the Kramer-Shoup encryption scheme. So that's more efficient, 5 modular exponentiations. We have CCA security under DDH, now even in a standard model, no need of random oracle anymore. But the inconvenience that we get here is that you now have those C and D values in the red frame, and they are really allowed to check the validity of the ciphertext. And in order to be able to really perform this check, the trustees need to reveal some private information. So that means that we cannot check the validity of the ballot immediately, as in the previous cases. We need to wait until the end of the vote submission phase, ask the trustee to reveal some secrets, and from that time, we can do publicly all the verification. So we used that technique a bit more than a year ago to tally a bit more than 4,000 votes. That worked fine, but adding this two-part key, asking the trustee to reveal some information and to keep some other secret information, really showed to make the tallying procedure much more complicated. So we started looking for something else, and we found a solution that was a simple variance of another encryption scheme proposed by Shoup and Gennaro in 97. It also requires 5 modular exponentiations. It offers CCA security under DDH now in the random oracle again, model again. And we used the techniques during this spring to tally a bit less than 4,000 votes. And we really saved half of the time of the tallying phase by just removing this phase where we ask the trustee to reveal those secrets, performing all those verifications, just making sure that we handle all the data properly. So that's really made a big difference in terms of tally, even though we showed, at least we thought at the beginning, that having this Kramer-Shoup method would not bring a lot of burden. Okay, in terms for the mixing, there are a lot of mixnet solution available, very efficient. We tried to find one that we could maybe explain more easily than others, and we also found that there was one solution that apparently was not covered by any patent, which made our life simpler when we want to distribute things and tell people, okay, you can use that freely if you want. So we chose that solution that was proposed by Terhelius and Wikström in two papers in 2009 and 2010. And so we used that, and we had 3 shuffling trustees. They all interacted through the voting servers. So the first trustee was downloading all the ballots, shuffling them, uploading the shuffled ballots and the proof of correct shuffle. And then the second shuffling trustee did the same, and so on until the end. And then the decryption trustees downloaded all the shuffled ballots and performed the decryption. In order to simplify things, we tried to have the code for the shuffle as easy as possible for practical use. So we implemented this mixnet in verifiable shuffle rather in one single Python file. It took less than 1,000 lines of code, and big part of it was interfacing, downloading ballots, and just data format. One third was actually cryptography. I have to mention that there is another implementation of the same proof of shuffles and actually of the complete mixnet that has been proposed by Douglas. It's much more complete, much more efficient. You should go for it if you have a big election. It's probably a bit more complicated to use, so it's really depend on your context. You will probably need to compile code and to install more things there. Okay, just to summarize about the lessons that we learned. About the job of trustees, it really became much more important in those mixnet-based elections. So we really measured more and more the importance of keeping the task of the trustee as simple as possible. The trustees need to manipulate secret data. So that means that we essentially need to leave them do it alone. We cannot help them. They have their secrets, and they need to keep their secrets. So are really important to keep their job simple. In practice also, people wait during the elections. They see people keep submitting ballots, and as soon as all ballots have been submitted, they come to us, okay, you have the computers. In 1 minute, you will come with the result now. It's really important to have this tallying phase to be as straight line as possible and to be able to solve any issue that might cause branching into the tallying phase as early as possible. to know when ballots are invalid before starting the tallying phase helps for that. Okay, so the conclusion is that mixed net tallying works fine, that's okay. It allows handling many types of election that we would not be able to handle otherwise, but it's still much more complicated than homomorphic tallying, so if you can use homomorphic tallying, we'd really recommend it. Thank you for your attention.
Any questions? We've got a few minutes. You can line up at the microphone.
Jim Soper from the Voting Rights Task Force. And you're talking about a system here that checks that the ballots are right, that the vote count is right. What happens when it's not right?
It is, yeah.
Well, what happens if you find a problem? What do? Can you recover?
We investigate. We found some problems in some elections, people saying that the content of the bulletin board was not correct. The nice thing is that the bulletin board only displays data that are linked to a specific voter name. So we can come back to that person and start discussing and see what happens and recover. So in practice, we always have been able to recover from all the problems that have been pointed.
If you have 480,000 voters in San Francisco, could you do that?
That probably will become much more complicated, yeah. I think that if that might bring some kind of denial of service attack. We try to have a process that involves different stages to push some burden on the voters if they want to complain, to try to give them as much evidence as possible to make it very difficult to provide some convincing complaint. And yeah, but that's definitely something that needs to be pushed further.
Okay, thank you.
If I can add a brief something, I think it's fair to say that a lot of the crypto end-to-end voting systems may reveal problems that would otherwise not be revealed, but I think if it's probably better to know about them, even if we still have to figure out the processes to handle all of them. So in other words, if there are problems, I would rather know that the problems are there. Yeah. Sorry, that was extremely opinionated for a chair. I'll shut up now. Thanks.
Peter Neumann, bonsoir. When you have a situation with stark contrasts, the benefits and disadvantages of homomorphic encryption versus the advantages and disadvantages of mixed nets, it is intriguing to see if you could come up with a system that encompasses both in some way, where you might get the disadvantages of both or you might get the advantages of both. And I wondered whether you'd ever thought of that. Is there any natural way in which one could combine the two and take advantage of the advantages rather than be succumbing to the disadvantages?
I think playing with this really gave us more motivation into trying to solve those problems. I think that when discussing with other cryptographers before doing that, they were saying, okay, problem is solved. We have solutions that bring just linear burden in terms of number of voters. So asymptotically, that's just optimal. So there is nothing to do in terms of research. I think that playing with this in practice really gives more pitch. I think it would be very interesting to find better ways. I do not know how to do it.
Hi, David Bismarck, University of Surrey in the UK. So you started out by saying that one of the advantages of homomorphic encryption is that you can make sure that it's a valid vote that goes into the system. Then you said you can't do this in mixnets. And then to the first question, your answer was that you did find something wrong with the contents of the web bulletin board and you were able to go back to the voter in question and see what had happened, essentially using their receipt. But that's only the first column in the mixnet, right? Because if an invalid vote pop out at the end, you can't really do that. You can't figure out who the voter was and check his computer for viruses or whatever it might be.
And that's true.
So does the proofs that were in there, do they stop you from submitting an invalid vote? Are you able to, I mean, if you...
In which approach?
In the mixnet.
In the mixnet. No, it's possible to submit an invalid ballot, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's much more complicated. What we could do is to ask the shuffling trustee to keep their permutation secret, to not just erase them immediately, but to keep them secret. And if there is something invalid, maybe to try to go backwards into the mix servers. That would be very difficult in practice.
Right.
So I think it's more than... The situation is more like what we have in paper voting, when during the tallying phase we say, okay, this is something invalid, and that's the only thing we can say.
So my point would then actually be that the opposite. So don't keep the secret data, but just do destroy it. And I
think it's much safer, yeah.
Yeah, because... and then make the rule such that if an invalid vote pops out at the end, that was the voter's prerogative to submit an invalid vote. And maybe she didn't want to, but she did.
Yeah.
And if you want to vote online, then you have to live with the risk that whatever.
I think that's definitely the way we handle it in practice. Still, it's something that if we receive something that shows that to be invalid, we may wonder whether this was deliberate from the voter or whether the voter had been abused somehow. And in that case, start to see whether some abuse had occurred on a wider scale. It's really helpful to be able to do that for just auditing the entire election. It's just one extra feature that we might like to have. Thank you.
All right, let's thank Olivier again.